Glad you're along here on Friday. For about a week, sex education has been one hot topic in the Lansing area. It began last week when Alice Drager, an author, college professor, and activist, live-tweeted from her son's sex ed class at East Lansing High School. Among the quotes from the instructors, according to Drager, safe sex is kind of a misnomer, and you'll find a good girl. If you find one that says no, that's the one you want. Drager and many others on social media blasted the approach for being outdated, unconcerned with credible data, and focused on fear and shame. Michigan schools that teach sex education are legally obligated to include a unit on abstinence. But what is the right way to go about it? What ought to be included in an instruction on abstinence? What ought to be omitted? For their thoughts, we turn to two guests. Judy Keeler's been a member of the Reproductive Health Advisory Committee in the East Lansing School District. She's in her third year in that role. Welcome, Judy. And Wendy Sellers trains educators in reproductive health. She's taught hundreds of sex educators over the years, many of whom are now working in schools in Ingham, Eaton, and Clinton counties. Welcome, Wendy.
Thank you.
Clarify the landscape for us a little bit, Wendy. How can are schools obligated to teach sex ed in Michigan?
Yes, Michigan law does require that abstinence is taught as part of a sex ed program, and that's been the law for many years.
But are schools obligated to teach sex ed in the first place?
No.
Or can they opt out of that?
Michigan law does not require sex ed to be taught. It is allowed, and if schools do teach sex ed, there are some strict criteria they have to follow in order to teach sex education.
Okay, but abstinence has to be a part of the instruction if they choose to educate kids about sex.
Exactly.
Okay, besides abstinence, what else can be taught?
Schools are required to teach young people how to reduce their risk of having sexual activity and also refusal skills. They have to teach them the laws of Michigan related to sexual behavior and many other components that have to be included in that instruction. And it has to be medically accurate.
But broadly speaking, the units then are abstinence and, would you say, risk reduction? Is that how all the other stuff is basically identified?
The law does not specify what has to be taught in those terms. It's up to local control. So each school district that teaches sex ed in Michigan has to have a sex ed advisory board made up of parents, educators, clergy, medical personnel, and students. And they make recommendations about what is taught and how. And then the local school board has to either approve or change those recommendations. And once the school board approves that curriculum, that is what is taught in that district.
So there's a fair amount of local control when it comes into how a district addresses this.
Very much so.
And Judy Keeler, you are a member of that committee that Wendy just referred to in the East Lansing School District, correct?
Correct.
Now, in East Lansing, kids have a unit on abstinence, but the risk reduction piece is also a part of it. So both of those are addressed. Do you personally think that both abstinence and risk reduction should be included?
I absolutely do believe that both should be included. Not everyone subscribes to being abstinent, so we really want to make sure that our youth are protected.
How do you feel about districts that only teach abstinence?
Well, I think that every district should have the right to make their own decisions because we live in a diverse community, a diverse world. For instance, what is acceptable in Holland, they may have more religious-based or different beliefs or different kids from different countries than what we have here. In East Lansing, we have over 40 countries represented, which means you have diverse cultures, religions, values, and mores, and we have to respect that.
Wendy Sellers, are there different outcomes for districts that only teach abstinence? I mean, do we know about the outcomes there?
Yes, we do. There's a lot of research on this topic. It's been hotly debated, and everything in education has to be based on data. And so if we look at the data, by the time seniors graduate from high school, approximately half of them have already had sexual intercourse at least once. And so if we look at the data, if we only teach abstinence, we're not meeting the needs of all of our students because education is for life. And high school may be the last best chance that young people get to learn about sexual behavior and how to reduce their risk. And so the research shows that schools that teach only abstinence, not only does it not delay sexual intercourse, but when young people do finally have sexual intercourse, they're more likely to become pregnant and to get sexually transmitted infections.
Talk to us a little bit about how you instruct teachers with regard to the abstinence piece, though. What exactly do you teach?
Well, I train teachers how to increase their comfort and confidence in talking about sexual topics with their students. I teach them about the laws in Michigan related to sex education. And as far as abstinence, I encourage them not to use the term abstinence, because the word abstinence means different things to different people. So we talk about the fact that young people are very concrete thinkers, and if we're going to instruct them in meaningful ways how to delay sexual behavior, we need to talk in very concrete and specific terms. Teaching kids to delay sex is most effective if we teach them all those skills before they begin having sex. So we need to start those conversations earlier rather than later.
And does teaching about abstinence, is there a consensus that teaching kids about abstinence should not include inducing guilt or fear about it?
I would say there's not consensus, because there are still programs that rely pretty heavily on stereotyped messages about not having sex based on whether you're male or female. There are still programs that emphasize condom risk failure rates rather than encouraging young people to eliminate those failure rates by using condoms consistently and correctly, in which case they are 98% to 99% effective. And so I would say there's not consensus, because some programs still do rely on more fear-based tactics than we would prefer kids to hear.
We're talking about how to teach abstinence in sex education here in Michigan. Our guests are Wendy Sellers, who helps train teachers in teaching reproductive health. Judy Keeler is a member of the East Lansing School District's Reproductive Health Advisory Committee. Judy, you've told me you are a critic of shame-based or fear-based sex ed instruction. In your view, does the SMART curriculum, that's Sexually Mature, Aware, Responsible Teens, the SMART curriculum that East Lansing has used for many years, do you feel that the SMART curriculum includes shame-based or fear-based messages?
Well, I'll first tell you that I do not believe in using fear or guilt or shame, but I do truly believe that people need to be educated in the consequences. They should be taught what the consequences are of the decisions that they make. Regarding the SMART curriculum, I have not reviewed it in detail, and I was not there the day of the presentation, so I am not comfortable commenting one way or another. And I would defer that to Wendy, because I know that she is familiar with the SMART curriculum.
Tell us about what you know about the SMART curriculum, Wendy.
Well, my knowledge of the SMART curriculum is more historic than current. I've known about the SMART program for probably 20 years or more. We worked together on an Ingham County Abstinence Coalition in the past, and I know that they're very well-intentioned. One of the hallmarks of the program is they have slightly older students, usually college-age students, do testimonials about the negative outcomes and consequences of sexual behavior that they've had. And they also do a dice game where they toss the dice, and then depending on what number you roll, you end up being pregnant. Unfortunately, sometimes the messages that are delivered are not as effective as they could be using those two strategies.
I want to return to those strategies in just a few minutes, but Judy, I want to, we are getting some messages on social media, both Twitter and Facebook. And Judy, I want to address with you, it seems like people's awareness of the SMART program and its methods have become a lot more apparent since this situation a week ago. As a member of this Reproductive Health Advisory Committee, do you feel you were as aware of the SMART approach as you should have been? Aaron Graham is tweeting us here this morning. Was the Reproductive Health Committee aware of the SMART program? Were they aware that Pregnancy Services of Greater Lansing was coming in?
With the Reproductive Health Committee, what we do is we're responsible for making recommendations from kindergarten through high school or 12th grade. So what happens is we review the different elements, because obviously we don't teach the kindergartners the same things that we teach the 12th graders. So it has been done on a rotational method. So we have, I have not seen the SMART program as of yet, but that was our next segment, because we, you know, do K through 6, 6 through 8, and then 9 through 12. So I've not been exposed to that curriculum.
But given your opposition to shame-based or fear-based messages, how much concern do you have about the SMART program being in the East Lansing School District? I mean, Nell Kuhnmensch, the president of the school board, told Judy Putnam of the Gannett newspapers the other day that she expects the SMART program to really to not be a part of the for the district to move and remove the SMART program from East Lansing. From what you've learned about their methods just in the past week, how concerned are you about these alleged fear and guilt-based messages that SMART has in its approach?
Well, Mark, I'm concerned because we have to remember, first of all, that we are exposed to this through Alice's tweets, and Alice has definite biases. So I was not there, so I'm not comfortable accepting what she says as being 100%. I think, yes, we should review it, we should look at it, yes, but I can't make my decisions based on one person's tweets.
Wendy Sellers, to what extent does a responsible sex health educator acknowledge that sex is pleasurable to a class of 12-year-olds or 13-year-olds, let's say? How explicit is a responsible educator about that message?
Well, you have raised a very hotly debated topic, Mark. Most sex educators would rather not ever admit that sex is pleasurable to students of any age. And yet, as parents and as responsible community members, if we're honest with ourselves, wouldn't we eventually like to know that our children have a wonderful sex life at the right time, with the right person, in the right circumstances? And yet, much of our sex ed programming teaches sex as something to be feared, something with lots of negative consequences, rather than equipping our young people to have a great adult sex life. Mm. And so this is a really difficult topic. How do we find the balance between communicating that, yes, indeed, sex can be pleasurable? That's why more than 95% of people eventually do have sex. And most of those people do usually have sex before they get married, without encouraging kids to run right out and try it, which is the fear that we as adults have. Mm. If kids find out it's pleasurable, they might want to run right out and have sex before we think they're ready. Mm. That's our fear.
Alice Drager has tweeted the program here this morning with a question for you, Judy Keeler. She asks, is it true you have pulled your kids from East Lansing Public School sex ed?
I have one son, and yes, early on, when we first came to the district, we did excuse our child from the sex education portion, and that's due to the fact that we wanted to educate him based on our values and our beliefs, and I needed to know what was being taught. As a responsible parent, I feel that I need to know what my child is being exposed to. So yes, I did, but my son has been going through, and so he has been exposed to it since.
One thing at the heart of this story seems to be how unaware many people are of how sex ed is taught in their community schools. Many people were surprised by Alice Drager's tweets. Neil Kuhnmensch, as I said, of the East Lansing School Board, has acknowledged the SMART curriculum had been used for many years, and she said, and this is very close to a quote, if not a quote, none of us were particularly aware of it. Should the wider public be paying more attention to how sex ed is taught in their district? Wendy?
Absolutely, and I think that is the really positive thing about the circumstances of the last week, and that is that it has brought this topic to the public's awareness, and it has promoted some conversations that really need to happen. I think that communities, and especially parents of children who are in schools, really need to take an active interest. Parents have a lot of power in helping equip their young people for delaying sex sex until the right time. And that right time is really formulated by family values and spiritual beliefs and many other circumstances. And so the more parents are involved in those conversations with their children, the better the outcomes. And so I'm really thrilled that these conversations have been brought to everyone's awareness right now.
Last word. Judy, are you going to be looking closer at the SMART program in East Lansing? Are you going to be taking a closer look at that and learning more about it?
As my role on the committee, yes, I will. But I wanted to also point out that parents do have, by law, the right to view the information. We do contact parents and let them know that the information is available. So the district has not done anything incorrect. We have availed parents of that information. So I just want to make that clear. And we also have a process in place for expressing concerns or making recommendations. So I want people to understand that the district has been open and forefront on this.
How often does the committee meet? That'll be my last question. We're out of time. How often does the Reproductive Health Committee meet?
We in the past have met 2 to 3 times a year.
Okay. Wendy Sellers trains educators in reproductive health. She is with Eaton County RESA. Our other guest here today, Judy Keeler, has been a member of the Reproductive Health Advisory Committee in the East Lansing School District. We'll probably have you back and talk about this again. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you. Our pleasure.
Thanks.